we get the hour rolling by welcoming back to the program one of our favorites on the show. I say it every time. I'm just going to dispense with that. We'll just say the awesome David Roth of Deadspin joining us. Hello, David.
Hi, Rich. Thanks for saying it all the same. I don't know if the listeners like it, but I really do.
I don't care. This is for us.
Yeah. Right
on. Because I approach this the way the Wilpons do the Mets.
Right into it. Yeah.
What?
Things are going very well.
Wow. Well, you know, we thought it had peaked when they hired a 107-year-old pitching coach.
Yeah, so they did hire an 82-year-old pitching coach last week, and I, in the process of writing about it, I went from being frustrated that they were doing a thing that no other major league team would do, I'm a big fan of Phil Regan's now. He seems like a really cool dude, and I feel bad that he has to talk to Fred Wilpon as much as he probably does.
Yeah, I read your piece on Regan, and I guess I was impressed that, I hope to be as sharp and as with it and is on top of current trends when I'm 82 as Phil Regan is.
Yeah, he still throws batting practice all the time at 82, and apparently he's worked with players in A-ball and stuff, so presumably he's a very patient guy. I mean, I don't know how much you could pay me now to just hang out with 20-year-olds all the time, but it would have to be a lot, and it would have to be someplace more interesting than St. Lucie, Florida, and yet he seems to like it, and now he's got to sort of suffer with the team and, whatever, deal with the bad vibes. It's actually gotten way worse since, I think he'll probably do an adequate job, and then when they finally fire their manager, he'll hire somebody else, whoever the new guy is. But man, I would not want to spend the next 4 months just doing air travel with the Mets right now.
Well, this bizarre situation that happened yesterday at Wrigley with both Mickey Callaway and Jason Vargas going off on a poor reporter. Do we know anything more today?
There's been some sort of, the story's moved forward in the sense that the reporter is Tim Healy, the beat writer for Newsday, which is the Long Island tabloid, he was interviewed by somebody else from that paper about what happened, which I gather is what happens with this. Beat writers aren't supposed to write about their experiences getting cursed out and threatened by the people that they're covering because somehow that makes them the story. I've never really understood that. But he basically said, "See you tomorrow," to Mickey Callaway as Callaway was leaving the ballpark. And Callaway's job security is such that he took that as a dig on the possibility of him being fired. This is the most messy aspect of it. The more that people have talked about it, the more they were just saying that Callaway was kind of looking for a fight, and that he could have also said, "Have a great day," or, "Nice weather we're having," and Callaway would have been like, "What do you mean by that?" and then would have had to deal with it.
I love this this line from your latest piece talking about Rob Manfred and what the commissioner can and should do, and you talk about the franchise being run like a skunk-infested Quiznos franchise. That's the best description ever.
I am fond of it as well, thank you. I have to keep coming up with new ways to describe them, because it is like a family business, and in the way that a lot of baseball organizations sort of are. They're owned by rich people who use them to do whatever it is they want to do. And some of those people want to win World Series, and then in the case of the Wilpons, their thing is that I guess they really like making people damage their elbows. I don't know where that fetish came from, or I don't think there's a name for it. I don't know if it's in the DSM or anything like that, but that seems to be what they're really into. The idea of it being like a franchise, though, I think they, but it's just the Mets. I care about them too much, but there's no reason why anybody really should. But yeah, they do sort of treat it like a franchise of much less renowned than a baseball franchise.
Speaking of franchises, shifting sports for a moment to the Boston Celtics, we all had such high hopes for this year. It never panned out the way we hoped it would. And now it appears to be a mass exodus from Boston with Kyrie Irving, don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out, Al Horford bailing, and all of a sudden Danny Ainge's master plan in great question.
Yeah, it's confusing, right? I have a tendency to probably put more of this on Kyrie than is fair, but it really just seemed like he was a fairly toxic dude. And the vibe there was sour all season long. I'm just surprised to see, I was definitely surprised that Horford was so apparently adamant about leaving. I'm not surprised that he's got a good contract waiting for him, apparently. That was like Woj was saying that he's got multiple, you know, nine-figure offers, and that's, he's a really good player, you know, like, and he's still very useful and does a thing that's extremely hard to do. I just would have thought that the Celtics would be able to keep him, and the fact that he just doesn't want to be there anymore suggests that something's not cooking right.
Do you wear your new Wally Szczerbiak jersey everywhere you go?
I could not possibly be prepared for this question, Rich. I'm gonna tell you what this. So, I might as well. I'll explain what he means by that. I did buy a Wally Szczerbiak Cleveland Cavaliers jersey over the weekend at the Goodwill in my neighborhood.
I'm jealous. I'll admit it right up front.
It's a hideous garment. Those are bad looking jerseys. And this one's, it's official enough that everything's stitched onto it. So it weighs like 4 pounds. It's not like a thing that anyone should wear. I don't know what the resale value is on a Cleveland Cavaliers Wally Szczerbiak jersey. I know that you could at least get one person to pay money for it, but like now I have it and I don't know if there's another person that would.
On a completely unrelated note, I need your advice
here. There, man.
Well, they're all unrelated, let's be honest here. I have to ask you this. Did my love years ago of Tim Russert blind me? Did it obscure reality? Has Meet the Press always been the place where bad people went to tell lies? Or is it just that Chuck Todd is particularly inadequate?
I think that Todd is bad. Russert, it's interesting because like I have a similar sort of soft spot for him, although apparently I guess the revisionist line on him is that it was just as much of a message laundering thing when he was there. You just needed to prepare a little bit more because he did ask questions. Whereas Chuck Todd, I mean, having Trump on there and asking him, you know, like, where are you feeling like putting your presidential library? Like, how does it feel to be so strong? Like, I don't know who that serves. And the idea that just putting him on there and letting him, I mean, Trump said some stuff, even by his standards, it's very much untrue, saying that the child separation thing was a policy he inherited from Obama. Like, that's, I'm a sports writer and an idiot, and I know that that's false. Like, it's Chuck Todd's job to know that, and he didn't say anything.
It's all bizarre to me, and equally bizarre is this. What does it say about the state of our politics, and the Republican Party, for that matter, that Steve King barely stands out from the crowd?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's the most depressing thing out of any of it. Because he's basically, I mean, he's a troll. Like, he's not a legislator or anything. He doesn't really do very much, you know, even by the standards of members of Congress. But just, like, having him around and knowing that there is, like, one more or less out national socialist in the House of Representatives, not cool to me, personally, just as somebody whose family's had a bad history with Nazis, which I won't go into, but it's the idea that this man is just sort of out there as a backbench dude who's like more or less, I mean, like, I would say that he's not as, I don't know what his actual, you know, gambit is. Like, some of these guys are trying to get on TV. I think Steve King just likes his job and likes being, you know, whatever, flown to Hungary every now and then to give a speech to like the racist soccer union party.
We've talked about this before, and I guess I'm somewhat serious about this. Does it bother you that I really believe this? Nobody can get inside Trump's head and write about him like you do. No political reporter, nobody I know of, can capture the essence of Trump. Does that make you stay up late at night?
It's not fun. It's nice of you to say. I'm choosing to take it as a compliment.
It is. Oh, it is.
There's obviously other ways it could be read. It's weird. I mean, I don't think I have any special insight into Trump beyond just always taking him at face value. I think that there's still this tendency for people to look at him and be like, well, why is he doing that? You know, like, what is this? Like, what's his game here? And the answer is just that he can't do it. There is no game.
Right. There's subtext,
no other
ever
layer to unpack. Mm. Yeah. And so that basically what you see, like, whenever he lies, you know, it should be like thuddingly obvious because he's just saying the opposite of whatever's true always. And so when he says, you know, that like, I didn't do this, it's basically, that means more than him saying that he did do it, because it basically, like, when he does say something in a declarative way, it's ordinarily false.
Well, you capture it. We thank you for that. You're doing the nation a great service.
Thanks. I had a miserable time writing the last story about him, and I really am looking forward to taking a break for a little while.
By the way, I'm upset. I don't know why you're not. I've seen no comments about it. But why did you get no credit at all for your tightrope walk over Times Square?
I don't even really, like, there's a couple of bridges in Maine that I have it out for. Like, I don't really enjoy heights terribly much at all. The one in, it takes you to, not Searsport, I don't know. There's one down east that, like, I especially see in my dreams every now and then. I was in the office yesterday they moved us to Times Square, which is not really that great. That's where our new owners have decided that we should work. We work in the same building as Planet Hollywood, which is great because you can just go to Planet Hollywood whenever. But the tightrope walk, we were there yesterday and watched it, my wife and some coworkers from a conference room on the 27th floor. And again, I didn't really care for the height element of it very much. Oof. Knowing that they were not going to fall to their death because they were clipped into a safety line made it a little bit easier for me to take. But it was cool. I think that, you know, living in New York, like living anywhere else, you know, you spend most of your time indoors kind of like being grouchy and going through your TiVo. And it's nice to periodically do something that reminds you that it's, you know, that you live in a specific place.
You've also
somehow that involved going to Times Square on Sunday night. But
you've also honored a number of those people. We're talking with David Roth of Deadspin. I've particularly enjoyed you pointing out New Yorkers of distinction.
Yeah, this is something that I try to keep an eye out for, just because, again, it's, you know, if I'm just stressed out, getting on the train, getting off the train, getting back on and getting back off, I'm missing some of the, you know, I'm just living someplace that's more expensive and more difficult, and I'm not noticing any of the good stuff. There are some endearing weirdos here, or just things that happen on the street that, you know, sort of pop as not necessarily only in New York, but things that are welcome. The one that I think I mentioned most recently was on Sunday in our neighborhood. There were two kids that were raising money for, like, it's like an autism walk or something. It's a charity walk. And they were playing Eye of the Tiger, like the Rocky song. And there were two sisters, and one of them was playing a violin and the other one was playing a trombone, which is not, I think, a classic arrangement of that song. Like, I don't know that the original contains either trombones or violins, as I recall. It was not a great version, but it was authentically one of the weirdest things I've ever heard, and I was so happy to hear it. We gave him $1.
That's perfect. There you go. Any time in Maine coming up for you this summer?
Yes, soon. We are inside of 2 weeks, and we are going to be up around Greater Stonington Deer Isle for most of that. And yeah, I'm always looking forward to it. I find being around my wife's family to be a lot more relaxing than being around mine. So I don't know you'd have to ask her how much she's looking forward to it. But to me, it's just mostly, I don't know, we play a lot of cards and make vegetarian food and periodically go on weird hikes. I'm into it.
That sounds awesome. We'll get it cleaned up for you before you get here.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
It's what we do. David, thank you as always. I enjoy your time in Maine, and we'll catch up with you again very soon.
Thanks for having me, as always, man. Have a good one.
You too. David Roth, Deadspin here on Downtown.